Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
I am Javier.
We are back at it. It's February, which also means the Royal Rumble's done. We're going to talk about the first of our two parts on Owen Hart in a second. We got to talk about the Rumble, which was, in our opinion, really good.
Yeah. I mean, look, man, when you consider that last year's Rumble was 10 hot pounds of ass, it's really difficult to go even further down. I mean, to me personally, last year, the only good thing on that entire show was the Roman Rollins match. And
which
everything
was
that was
really good.
That. Yeah. This year, I mean, look, the Pitch Black match was what it was. I honestly kind of thought it looked a little cool.
I thought it looked cool because I hadn't looked at Twitter, and then Twitter was shitting on it. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess not.
But here's the thing, man. Bray Wyatt wasn't that great of a wrestler before he left. This is his first match back. My expectations for the in-ring work weren't very high. No. I just think, consider him a storyteller. Some of the greatest wrestlers of all time aren't great in-ring performers, but they're great storytellers.
Yeah, you know.
Like LA Knight's really
like
good.
Dog.
LA Knight's one of the best sellers out there. That man was selling his ass off for Bray. And I thought it was cool. The Bianca Belair Alexa Bliss match was just not very
flat.
Good.
Wasn't
it didn't good. Have to be there.
But I thought the Women's Rumble was okay. I didn't think it was great. I thought it was okay. I thought there were some good performances. I thought Rhea was excellent. I thought Liv was excellent. I thought the re-debut of Asuka as Murder Clown was great.
Yeah. Kana's back and she's about to destroy the entire roster. You know, I will say this. I thought match for match, I do think that the Women's Royal Rumble was better as an entire product than the Men's Rumble. But I will say I just really think that the Men's Rumble had, like, the peaks were just way higher for me.
I think the Men's Rumble was a better match. I liked it start to finish. I had no real notes. My only concern was when I thought Logan Paul might win, and I was gonna cry. But then I remembered that they did that match already. So I was like, never mind. They've done that already. We're fine. But the other thing, and you and I talked about it before we started recording, Cody winning from 30 as a babyface is a tough look.
Yeah. I hated that. And it seems like
my one big gripe.
It seems like pretty unanimous that has been a thing with people beyond just Cody winning and getting flat backlash for it. And look, let's just call it what it is. You don't get to be a top guy, like one of the pantheon guys within that company, without getting the backlash. Like, the you know, Roman still to this day, even though the guy's very clearly the face of pro wrestling, gets a lot of flack. Cena got it for how fucking long?
Yeah.
Rock got it for a while there. I'm sure, listen,
for his university, everybody got it.
For as universally loved as Stone Cold Steve Austin was, you mean to tell me there wasn't a little bit of backlash for Stone Cold in that era?
Here's my thing with people who have problems. Like, I have a problem with Cody winning from 30. Literally just make him come out four spots earlier. Make him come up at 26. It wouldn't have gotten as much backlash. I promise.
Yeah.
Ideally, he comes out in the teens. That's a good spot for a babyface to win from. Here's my issue, though. There's nothing wrong with the obvious choice being the right choice and being the choice you go with. They're the obvious choice for a reason. Cody was the obvious choice for a reason.
Yeah. I was very happy with the way that the show played out, because it played out exactly how I expected it to. And it's the correct way to do it. Like, yeah, it was obvious, but what's the point of doing a surprise? What do you want, the surprise of fucking I don't know,
Ricochet
winning the Rumble? Because it's like, oh my god, but now you just have Ricochet versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, and that's cool, that's great, but there has just not been enough work done on Ricochet to warrant main eventing the biggest WrestleMania since 2005.
The last,
basically, since Rock was here.
The last, you know, good surprise Rumble winner was Shinsuke. And even that,
yeah,
he was like one of the five people who could win.
Yeah. Look,
we just didn't think WWE would do anything that made us happy.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think Cody is going to be the next guy.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think he's going to get to that Roman, Cena, whatever level. But I also do not think that under Triple H we're going to have that. I think that what Hunter is really going to try to do is build the product like kind of do what AEW does, build the product around a handful of guys, two, three guys who can then just kind of be the rotating cast at the top of the card. Like, it's going to be Cody. It's going to be Rollins. Roman's going to float in and out. I don't think he's going to be a part of that collection. And then we've got guys who are going to just end up coming up and being a part of that collective, like your Gunthers, like your, if you look down at NXT, I really do think Carmelo Hayes is going to be one of those guys. Like,
I still have all my Montez Ford stock. I do.
I'm right there with you with Bron Breakker.
If Sami Zayn and Roman Reigns and the rest of the Bloodline didn't put on the greatest, probably the best wrestling storyline we've seen.
Oh my god!
I don't know what else. I don't know.
Honestly, in my opinion, I think it's the greatest of all time. The just the year. It's been 3 years of this, man.
And the acting is good. Everyone's good at acting in this. The Usos should get acting gigs. Anyways, if that part didn't happen, we would all be talking more about how Gunther is a made man, because he is a made man after that Rumble.
Hell yeah. Again, Sami Zayn just record
fucked it all up.
No, I mean, look, it's just I could go for fucking hours on this storyline, and I did. The matter of fact, I did. Monday night, when I was in bed about to go to sleep, my girlfriend was right there. I just ranted about this storyline. Every single nuance of it, from the Usos to Solo to Roman to Sammy, his relationship with Owens, and how everything kind of led with Paul Heyman as well, with all these guys, and how everything just led to this moment where everything just exploded. And she fell asleep, but I just kept going, even though I knew she was asleep, because I needed to get it out there. And it just, man, it's just so perfect. Like, I genuinely don't think a storyline in wrestling has ever made me feel this level of investment. And that includes the run that John Cena had to the world title in 2005, and that Eddie Guerrero had to the world title in 2004. And those are the two, like staples of my wrestling fandom and passion. And this thing, man, it's just insane. Like, from Jey Uso to Sammy to Jimmy, all the little things about this. I can't wait to see what's next. I can't wait to see what's going to happen at Mania. And all I know is, book it right fucking now. It's not going to be the main event of SummerSlam. It'll probably end up being the co-main event of SummerSlam. Jey Uso versus Roman Reigns. Jay's going over.
I love that. I love that. The Rumble was good. I'm genuinely excited for the road to WrestleMania. I would like to just deflate you by thinking, it's rich that you think that Triple H is going to be in charge of creative for long term.
I just, let me have my hopes, man.
Let's talk about our wrestler. You know what we do on this podcast when we don't talk about the Rumble for the first 8 minutes of the pod? We take a wrestler, we look at their career through five of their best matches. And for certain wrestlers, they get bonus parts. And to kick off Valentine's month, we are looking at Owen Hart in a two-part special. We've got his early stuff this week. We've got New Japan. We've got Stampede Wrestling. We got him being introduced to WWF audiences, not as Owen Hart, but as the Blue Blazer. I really dug this week's combo of matches. It's an interesting dynamic. It's very much an origin. Like, it's like watching Batman Begins. It's very much all the origin pieces of Owen Hart. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, man. It's really cool shit. It's just one of those things where, like, especially here, you just kind of see the same guy. That's honestly the thing that I really took out of this is from the beginning, I believe the first match is, what, 88, 89?
88.
And even for the last match is 94 on this episode, and it's the same guy. It's the same quality. It's facially the same look, same hair, same build, which is weird.
And same general aura of, I know I'm really good at this, so I'm going to fuck around a bit. But in the best way.
Yeah, we'll get to that more as we get into the matches. But Owen, man, fuck me, just so good at this shit. And honestly, I know we'll probably end up talking about this more towards the end of this episode, probably more so in the next one, but Owen Hart has always been revered as a guy who should have been a world champion. And honestly, after watching this episode, what I got from this is, yes, absolutely, based on talent, ability, everything, Owen Hart absolutely should have had a run with the world title.
Absolutely.
But did Owen Hart want to be the world champion? Because you just watch this and you're like, oh, this guy's just having fun. He doesn't really give a shit.
He obviously cares about the craft. He respects it. But at the same time, he has said repeatedly that he had tried numerous times to find a profitable living outside of wrestling. He didn't want to be a wrestler like everybody else. So obviously, he's part of the Hart family, the legendary Hart family, born to Stu and Helen in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. He is the youngest of the 12 Hart siblings. How many Hart siblings can you name?
Oh, man. So there's Brett, obviously.
Yep.
Owen.
Yep.
Jesus Christ. Stu's the dad.
Stu's the dad, and Helen's the mom.
I'm blanking. I know there's Natty's mom.
Yep.
There's the one that married Bulldog.
Yeah.
There's the other brother that was a wrestler.
I feel like most of them tried it at one point. Do you want me to go through the list?
The one that was like in the whole story with them.
Yeah.
And that's all I got for you.
The Hart siblings: Owen, Smith, Bruce, Keith, Wayne, Dean, Ellie, Georgia, Brett, Allison, Ross, and Diana.
Ellie's Natty's mom, right?
Ellie's Natty's mom, I believe, or one of Ellie or Georgia.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I think Georgia might be Bulldog's wife.
Bulldog's wife, yeah. And then I think the one you're thinking of were Bruce and Keith, because they were the other Harts that got involved.
Bruce is the one, yeah.
So the youngest, he of course trained in the Hart Dungeon, worked for Stampede Wrestling, went to England to work for Max Crabtree's joint promotion in matches, then ended up on ITV's World of Sports. That's a very English reference for everyone, yeah. Ran in Stampede for the next couple of years while honing his skills. And then in 1987, branched out to Japan, where he wrestled for New Japan on several tours, including being part of what is now Best of the Super Juniors, the first tournament of it, which was Top of the Super Juniors, 1988. And we've got a match from that we're looking at first against a guy we saw during Japanuary. Who do we got in this one?
We got Hiroshi Hase, baby.
It's so hard to find clips of Owen in New Japan because he actually wins the Junior Heavyweight Championship. He's the first gaijin to have been IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion. Fun fact. We can't find clips of him winning the title or losing it. But we find this one where we weirdly join a match in progress, something I think we've never done on this show.
Yeah.
This is episode 150, and we've never joined a match in progress.
You know what's funny is, so this specific match has like this really sick intro to it where they show wrestlers in like really cool poses, really like it's just snapping back and forth between different people.
Kind of anime-ish.
Yeah, and it has like a really cool, like pumped up music, like very anime kind of music to start it off. And I'm like, am I about to watch an episode of My Hero? Is that what's happening to me here? I mean, I know I'm on my iPad, but come on.
Exciting stuff.
And yeah, we go right into it. I mean, Owen's just, he's rocking, what was it? It was like a blue, like onesie tight.
It's the blue singlet. Yeah.
Yeah, singlet. Looking like a fucking boss. And I took one look at this guy and I was like, oh, so Owen just looks like that his whole career. Okay.
Owen seems to have reached an age and then just never really aged past it. And then only when he cuts his hair later in his WWF run are you like, oh, you look a little older now. It's amazing.
He's like,
what a haircut.
Look that older.
No, he looks like he's grown up a little, but not a lot.
He just had wrinkles on his forehead. That's about it.
Yeah. Definitely. So, yeah, we join the match in action. Hart suplexes Hase, knee drop to the face. Hase with this beautiful high kick at one point, and Hart just kips up immediately. And I was like, oh, wait a no-sell, bud. Just your kick does nothing.
Oh, and at one point here, hits a suplex. That's just picture perfect, man.
Oh, yeah.
It's just so good shit. They trade simple holds back and forth. You know, a little headlock here, a little hammerlock there. Stuff like that. At one point, Owen gets a head scissors on. Hase flips out of it. And then they just have a slap fight.
Great slap fight. We were used to the slap fights all through Japanuary. It was great.
It was a nice little callback.
Hart then with a like abdominal stretch gut buster is what I called it. I was like, that's a unique move.
Yeah. That's about as good as you're going to get with that description. at one point they Owen hits like a running knee. Brett so used good. To do this a lot.
Yeah.
He runs up, just sticks his knee up pretty much, and the guy flips over the knee. And then they have a little transition again, and then he goes for it again. Except this time, Hase just ends up grabbing the leg and kind of flipping over it and then rolling up Owen with it, which just kind of leads me to the whole thing with Japan, man. You either hit your move a million times or you hit it once and it gets countered. Yeah. And that's just the beauty of it.
This is where I realized just how much speed is in this matchup.
Yeah.
Like Hase, when we saw him in Japan, where it was a little older, a little slower, a little more technical, Hase could run. This man could go. And Hart at this point could absolutely go to what? 1988. He's only 20.
My brother.
He's 22 at this point.
Oof. My brother's got also like a weird chopped haircut and a great mustache.
Yeah, it's not like a bowl cut, but it is like very. It's like he ran out of coin to use for hair.
It's like the rock star type of haircut where like they have their big bushy long hair, and then they just kind of like chop it so like it's kind of uneven in yeah. places.
How very.
And that's
hip.
Basically what it is.
I did love that catch by Hase into the roll-up, though. One of my favorite things we see in any of these matches this week.
Yeah.
Hart with a great power slam, too. Everything's crisp. Everything's clean. 22, and he's got it all figured out. Because, I mean, you grow up in the dungeon. You got to just pick this shit up, right? Like,
well, you got to think. The guy's probably been wrestling since he was in diapers.
Yeah.
You know?
I can't believe they put this baby over. Hart is up on the top turnbuckle, and he slips, and Hase pounces. Does like a gut wrench. We get some pinning combinations. Hart escapes. Hart hits a clean bridging German for a two.
Yeah.
Very nice. Then we're kind of running towards the finish. The finish is quick. It's kind of out of nowhere.
Yeah, right after that, Hase hits a tilt-a-whirl slam, follows that up with a running forearm, and then kind of traps. He gets a Northern Lights suplex off, but he kind of traps the arms while he's doing the bridge. So Owen's not really able to move. So you could see Owen like squirt.
Wiggle. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like wiggling a little bit, but he's trapped. So Hase's able to get to three count. And then as soon as he lets go, Owen immediately just like moves and he's like up again. He's like,
he just happened to get trapped in that thing. And Owen was really popular in Japan, like I said, the first non-Japanese wrestler to win the Junior Heavyweight Championship. He'd win it in May of 1988. His reign would last a month, and he would lose the title to Shiro Koshinaka in June 1988. Before he wins the title is when our next match takes place, but it's not in New Japan. It's in Owen's home country and his home promotion in Stampede Wrestling. It is May 6, 1988, and Owen is defending the North American Heavyweight Championship against a man named Makan Singh. Do you recognize this wrestler?
I wrote, hold up, is that Bastion Booger?
It is 100% Bastion Booger, a.k.a. Friar Ferguson. That is the man of the hour in Stampede Wrestling.
I can't believe I was right about that. I feel like you told me, but I thought I could have sworn in my mind you said Tugboat, and I was like, no, that's not Tugboat. It's Bastion Booger.
Yeah, that's Bastion Booger, which... This poor man, who I'm sure, his name's Mike Shaw, I'm sure later down the line we'll have to do a Mike Shaw episode, because I'm going to just list off some of the ring names this man has dealt with in his life.
Yeah, well, Makan Singh.
So Makan Singh, Friar Ferguson, Bastion Booger, Norman the Lunatic, which was in WCW, Trucker Norm, Mike Stryker, Klondike Mike, Cousin Mike.
Cousin Mike.
Big Ben Sharp. Jed Grundy, Trucker Norm, and Mike the Danger.
Mike the Danger is an absolutely outstanding name.
S-tier name.
It is. Have you know, Evan, I know we've talked about, like, you know, if you were to be a wrestler, what would your moveset be, all this other stuff. What would your ring name have been if you wanted to go into wrestling?
Oh, that's
you
got
the chance
tough.
To pick. The promoter's just like, quick, kid, what's your name? And he's just going to go with whatever you say. What is it?
God, I have no idea.
Do you know mine.
You got one in the bank?
Yeah, so my full name, I just grabbed the first initial of everything. So it's just Jem with a J.
Jem, ooh. Okay. It's like Gem and the Holograms.
J-E-M, just Gem.
You are this generation's MJF.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I am J-E-M, baby, Gem.
Damn.
This generation, Max. Max is like 6 months older than me.
Yeah, but the past is the past. So,
something like that.
So we've got Mockin Singh here versus Owen Hart. Also, if you watch this match and you're like, wow, my ears don't work, it's because the audio levels in this clip are tragically low. Like, comically low. I had to crank my computer to like 100 to hear what was fucking happening.
I don't know. I heard it pretty fine from my speakers.
Am I just old? Tell me on Twitter if I'm just old and I can't hear properly.
I thought it was a little low, but I didn't think it was like I have to crank my volume all the way up to hear these people.
Well, my computer is also a piece of shit, which I shouldn't say because it's currently recording and it could just give out on me if it hates me. Anyways, what did you think of watching this match?
This was so weird. I honestly weird did time. Not expect when I, okay, so when I see Owen going up against Bastion Booger, whole time I'm just like, oh, so Owens, and he's a champion, he's just gonna get worked on by this big dude the whole time. He'll have a hot babyface comeback here every once in a while. Maybe he'll target a body part like the Harts do and just figure it out from there. No, Owen has like 90% of the offense in this match.
Owen is in control.
He's insane.
He's wearing the same blue singlet he had when he worked in Japan. And that he uses as the Blue Blazer. Like, he just uses the same fucking singlet. Simple man. And he is just in control. He's got arm control early and enziguri. You know, he drop kicks. Singh's got two companions out on the outside. One of whom is Gary Albright, by the way, who was a guy who did have some success in wrestling. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
It's the one who looks like Isaac Yankum DDS, but isn't Kane.
Hold on.
That's the best way I can describe it.
So I remember they said his name. It was like Rob Singh or some shit like that.
Yeah, so they adopted the Singh last names from their manager. If I was reading this correctly.
That makes a lot of sense because Bastion Booger, that dude looks white as fuck.
Oh, you mean Mike the Danger? So Hart meets Singh on the outside, runs him into the apron, does a running crossbody, and then Owen goes off for a little bit. Running crossbody, then some chops in the ropes. Hits a crossbody in the ropes. And then does like a 619 move to avoid getting sent to the outside and knock Singh to the outside anyways. And I was like, look at Owen busting a 619 out in the mid-80s, late 80s.
At one point, Owen like runs off the ropes. Singh like bends over and Owen just jumps, balances on his neck, like on what the fuck is it? Singh's neck.
Yeah.
And then he does a flip, a backflip back off of his neck and just hits a clean drop kick.
Yeah, Owen, like this is what I mean by Owen, I think, is just fucking with people at some point.
Owen is a freak, man. I mean, listen, by all accounts, from Brett and everyone, Owen was always like just the most naturally talented of all the Harts. Like he was the one that picked it up the quickest. He was, Brett always said he was the best of us. Like, you know, and...
Which has right. to be annoying if you're the older siblings and your young one just shows up and just runs your shit.
Yeah, I mean, he's not wrong, you know? Owen Hart deserved everything. And, you know, probably due to a lot of different factors, some his own. He never really got to be that top level, but fuck, just seeing shit like this against a fucking Bastion Booger of all people, this guy's just popping off.
He's just fucking around with Bastion Booger. He works over Singh's arm, splash from the top rope onto the arm. Singh gets just walked over to the ring post and Hart smashes his arm into it. We had a distraction from the manager, whose name I did not catch, and Hart gets hit with a foreign object in the throat.
Yeah.
I thought it was an eye gouge at first, but it is a throat hit.
Yeah, they said something about a wooden object.
Yeah,
I didn't even know how you could see the wooden object.
So Singh takes control, and then immediately Hart bumps his ass off for this man.
Yes.
Like, you get a running leg drop, Singh clotheslines him, and the momentum from the clothesline didn't, like, flip him over the ropes or anything, but Owen Hart just almost slid out of the ring, a la Enzo Amore. Remember when that happened?
Yeah. That's...
That's Amore.
That's Amore, baby. At one point, he starts choking Owen on the top rope. Owen at one point flips out, drop kicks him, does a basement drop kick to pretty much get him out of the ring. Then he hits a suicide dive because they had topes back then, people. They just didn't do them as often.
Well, we have topes in Canada. We just call them Manitoba Flyers, you know?
Ooh.
Yeah, hit him with the Manitoba Flyer.
Are you sure they don't call them Calgary Crusades?
The Calgary Crusades. Suicide dive, scoop slam, second rope, knee drop by Hart. We get a top rope drop kick for a two count, and then we get the finish. Hart ends up whipped into the turnbuckle, and he's down. Singh picks him back up, whips him into the turnbuckle again, but this time Hart jumps up onto the top rope, flips over, and tries to do a sunset flip of Singh. The manager hops onto the apron and extends his cane. Singh holds onto it, sits down on Owen, and uses the leverage to get the pin and win the title. That was how he won the title that Owen had held for 392 days.
So they cut promos after this.
Did you stick around for the promos? I didn't.
Yeah, Owen just cuts a pure babyface promo. There's not really any like fire or anything to him. It's pretty bland, if I'm being completely honest with you. But he's also 22, and the Hearts were never great talkers. So
that's fair. They were never.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on that one. It's not a particularly bad promo. It's just not, you know, none to really write home about. And then the Singh guy gets on the mic, and this is his third title reign.
Yeah, Owen won it from him. 390 days ago.
This is his third title reign. And I'm like, Bastion Booger was a Calgary champion three times?
They call him Mike the Winner, not just Mike the Danger. All right. also, just because it's a fun fact, this was the day before Owen Hart's 23rd birthday that he had this match.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, and he's just fucking around with people already.
Maybe that's why he dropped the belt, because he knew he was going to get pissed after.
I have a date with some cold Canadians. All right, we're going to take a break. When we get back, we are looking at Owen Hart debuting in WWF. Back from the break, and Hart's success in Japan and Stampede, because they both had working relationships with WWF, led to Hart signing with the company in the summer of 88. Instead of him being the brother of Bret Hart, they decided to create a masked superhero type gimmick for him, which played into his high-flying style, because Owen Hart, for all his technical prowess, was the closest thing they really had to a cruiserweight high flyer in WWF at this time. Like, he was something entirely different. So yeah. We get the Blue Blazer gimmick. That's where it comes from. That's where he's going with it. And we're looking at his WrestleMania debut, a match I had no idea existed. I did not know this was part of the catalog. It's Blue Blazer versus Mr. Perfect from WrestleMania 5.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. If you were to ask me right now, hey, do you know what the main event of WrestleMania 5 is? I would have no fucking idea.
It's the Mega Powers Explode.
I thought that was WrestleMania 4.
No, that's the tournament.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay.
Well, there you go. You learned there something. We go. I guarantee there's a listener out there who's like, ah, Javier's a dumbass.
No, Javier was like negative 10 years old. I'm sorry.
I was only negative 6 years old. What do you think of the idea of like, let's bring in Owen Hart, but not make him a Hart brother in 88?
I don't hate it, because the Hearts at the night, Hart and Brett were a tag team at this point.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't going to get pushed anywhere higher than just being a duo. So what the fuck is the point of bringing Owen in as a part of that and making them a trio? There's not really that many trios out there. I mean, if you think about it, who's a trio at this point? Axe and Smash don't have the third
Crush.
One. Yeah, don't have Crush yet. You know, there's not really a trio out there for them to work with. So
no, you're right.
No, you just bring in Owen, you make him something else, and then eventually if the story, you know, makes sense, like it did when Owen started moving up the card a little bit with the IC title runs and all that jazz, then you slide Owen into the group and you let him work with Jim, or maybe he'll work with Brett every once in a while, which is exactly what they did. Yeah. I thought it was perfect.
It does make a lot of sense. I could see some people looking back in hindsight and being like, you gotta give Owen the shot, man. Like, he's so good. It's like, yeah, let him do something different. He'll get it over. He got the Blue Blazer character over. Like, let him do it.
Yeah.
This is also we're in the midst of the Mr. Perfect origins. He only started in November, I believe. They did the vignettes starting in September and October, and then he started his undefeated streak in November. So this is the first WrestleMania for Mr. Perfect as Mr. Perfect. So really, it's this weird two guys who are about to be a lot better.
Yes.
And we're right at the beginning. So what did you think watching the match?
It was just too quick. It's way too quick, and I thought Perfect was in a very weird role in this, where he's kind of like the heavy, and he doesn't really do much as far as offense goes. He's the heavy,
but he's also underestimating his opponent. It's a weird,
yeah.
Like Mr. Perfect is allowed to do that, but having him be that while also trying to be the physically dominant one is a really weird look for him in a match.
Yeah, it's not what I expected. Honestly, when I saw this, I was like, okay, well, I've never heard of it, so I'm not expecting a, you know, five-star classic or anything. Yeah. And then I looked at the time, and the video, the runtime of this video is, what, like 10
eight,
minutes or
something?
It was
8 minutes.
Yeah, so I know it's not going to be very, like, it's not going to be an extensive match. It's probably going to be Owen getting a little bit of shine, and then, you know, Perfect wears him out, and then, you know, he gets his offense in, boom, Perfect Plex, we're going home, which is a bit of what happens, but yeah. It just happened in a very weird way. There's not enough Perfect for me.
It's a lot of Blazer in control. He counters everything. It's like when you finally figure out how to use the reversal button in 2K, and you just can fucking dominate now. Like everything gets countered.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, no, you're not wrong. Immediately the clip starts. I see that they're in like a Trump hotel or some shit, and I'm like, oh, yeah. Fuck. Fuck this guy. Okay, we're doing this.
So, in the actual match, slaps in the corner by Perfect. Blazer slaps him back. Drop toe hold. Another slap. A hip toss counter by Blazer. Some scoop slams. Drop kick that knocks Perfect to the outside. I was like, okay, wow. Okay, they're going to get Blazer's. They're going to get all his shine in early. He's gonna just come out. He's got a lot of piss and vinegar as a baby face. And then Perfect will grind him down. But Blazer's in control for most of this match.
Yeah. Yes. Like you mentioned, drop, toe, hold, all that stuff. He flips out of a hip toss at one point, hits two scoop slams, drop kicks Perfect out of the ring, baseball slide straight to the jaw.
Yeah.
Back in the ring, Owen flips out again, hits a hip toss, another drop kick. Honestly, half this match was hip tosses and drop kicks.
Yeah, we get a backbreaker by Blazer for good measure.
One count, too.
It's true. Blazer goes up top, tries a big splash. Perfect gets the knees up in one of the most comical sells of all time. Because Blazer, he sells it like he's bouncing off a trampoline. Like he's attempting to do the fucking pommel horse. Like it's crazy.
My blood was in a bouncy house.
Perfect then goes with something that we don't see enough. Kidney punches. Those hurt. People should use those more.
I've never been punched in the kidney.
I haven't been punched in the kidney, but I've been like accidentally hit in the kidney. Holy shit. It's this. I equate it with the same thing as like when you get the wind knocked out of you and you hear that. You're like, the wind knocked out of me. How bad could that be? And then it legitimately happens to you. And like, I saw God. And he looks surprisingly like Rihanna. And like, you're like, and you bring it back. You know what I mean?
You saw Rihanna. That's weird. I saw Beyonce. It's crazy how that works.
Not a surprise. It's one of them. It's got to be one of them.
There's a handful of selections, and those are two of them.
You get there in Solange, and you're like, huh? All right.
Wait a minute. No, well, no, this is the bad place.
This is the bad place. So yeah, we get the kidney punches in the corner. Blazer with a boot and a slam. He had to get another one count. Perfect really is selling the fact that this guy's just like catching him off guard. He's not actually beating him, which kind of makes it better, but still, Perfect needed more offense.
Although Owen and then eventually just follows that up with a belly-to-belly for a near fall.
Very good belly-to-belly. Crucifix pin attempt by the Blazer for two count. Blazer then is arguing with the ref. Very un-babyface thing to do. And then we get a forearm to the face by Perfect, a Perfect Plex, and he gets the win. Perfect Plex is dominating enough that he can be taken out of this whole match and then just one of them and he wins.
Well, to be fair, that fucking forearm was brutal.
It was. I was impressed with Owen in this match. I was disappointed with Perfect in this match, and I just wish they got, instead of the 5.5 minutes they got, I wish they got 9.
Yeah, give him 8 or 9. I promise you it won't take away from any of the other matches you had on this card.
Savage and Hogan don't know that many wrestling moves. Well, Hogan doesn't, so just dial it back. Just dial it back.
I don't know that match. I don't think I've ever seen it. I don't think I've ever seen clips of it. I don't think I've ever heard anyone actually talk about the match itself. It's just not the story.
Bad. As far as especially as far as Hogan matches go, Savage has had better. It's not bad. It's just not a memorable. It's a memorable angle more than it's a memorable match.
Good for them.
Good for them. Shortly after WrestleMania, Hart would leave WWF, and he would tour the world both with and without the Blue Blazer gimmick. He returned to Stampede until it shut down in December of 89. In 1991, he actually lost the Blue Blazer mask in a mask versus mask match against Mexican wrestler El Canic, and then would not utilize the gimmick again until 1998. So this is the last we're seeing the Blue Blazer of this episode. He also went to New Japan. I didn't know this. He had a cup of coffee in WCW, which I was... It just sounds weird to say that there was a time when Owen Hart appeared in WCW. He had a match. He had, I think, 5 matches on TV in 91. And one of them saw him team with Ricky Morton. There's a fun fact for you.
Was it as himself or as the Blazer?
As himself.
Wow.
Right? Very interesting. Owen would rejoin WWF, and this time he was Owen Hart, and he would rejoin the Hart Foundation. He teamed with Jim Neidhart when Brett became a singles guy. He then went and formed High Energy with our boy Coco Beware.
Yeah,
there's no High Energy matches. If you really want, go listen to Coco Beware. What an episode, what a time. In 1993, he started teaming with Brett, and we get this underrated, this is maybe one of the best finds we've ever had on this podcast for a match to watch.
Truly.
And the second we tell you who it is, if you're a longtime listener, you're going to not be surprised what so fucking ever that we love this match. It is from a VH, like a Coliseum VHS collection.
Wrestling Challenge.
The WrestleFest or Wrestling Challenge. It goes by two names. Okay. 1994. It's Owen and Brett versus the Steiners. And it slaps. Holy shit.
So good. Holy shit. I this was one of those matches where after I watched it, I immediately sent you a message. I was like, this match slapped. This was fucking good.
Yeah. WrestleFest 1994. There's one. It was a Coliseum video that came out. And I think this match took place in South Carolina or something. Oh my God. This match is dope.
Yeah. Coming out of North Carolina. Anyways.
And even though, and we'll spoil it, there isn't a definitive finish, it doesn't matter because the wrestling is so good.
Which was such a bummer to me. I was like, God damn it.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed too.
At the same time, I actually kind of like the post-match stuff, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, no, this is still Steiners. Scott still has long hair. He's still jacked to the gills, but he's not the big booty daddy yet. So,
though he does end up on the mic after the match, and he sounds a lot more like 1999 Scott Steiner than you think at this point. You're like, huh. Well,
here's the thing, though. I think Scott was just always a big Papa Pump. I just don't think that he knew it yet.
It hadn't revealed itself yet.
Yeah, he hadn't started wearing the chainmail on his head yet.
Oh, Scott, how much maintenance was it to have his goatee be two different colors? You know what I mean? That sounds like a lot of upkeep.
Well, here's the thing. Is I think that it only really became an issue as he got older. Because obviously the brown part of it started fading and going to a not brown part of it. But I'm pretty sure the bleach part was pretty easy to maintain. No, I don't know. I've never bleached my hair, so I don't know how that
works. It seems like a lot of effort to bleach your hair.
I just assume if it's the goatee, no, because it's just a small area.
Yeah, but you got, that's the thing though, is you got to keep it up so it's distinct. I will say there was one point in my life where I was like, I'm going to bleach my hair.
Oh no. Oh
yeah. Yeah. I was going through it clearly.
Did you do it?
No, I didn't do it.
Oh fuck.
No, I didn't.
I was hoping there were pictures out there. I was about to touch your mom.
Absolutely not. All right. This match is another candidate for if we talk about everything, we'll be here all day.
Yeah, we'll talk about the big boy.
We'll talk about the broad strokes, but my God, this is a great match.
Scott immediately goes for a double leg takedown at the beginning, and I'm like, oh, we're starting this off right.
Which reminds me, one of my favorite bits of the Rumble was Chad Gable and Xavier Woods having an amateur wrestling match in the middle of the Rumble.
That was fucking great.
It was awesome. Because there is a very, there's a good Talk is Jericho podcast from years ago where Xavier Woods and Cody are on it talking about their rivalry as amateur wrestlers in Georgia.
Yeah, which was fucking hilarious.
Where Woods hated Cody and Cody did not realize that Woods existed, which is kind of shitty.
It's like Cody's just like the he was just naturally gifted. I remember this. I listened to it. I used to work at I don't know if they have it in Canada. Here we have this thing called Sky Zone, which are trampoline parks.
We don't have like a brand, but there's a bunch around. Yeah.
Yeah. And I used to work at one, and it was pretty far away from where we lived. It took my mom like she's a saint for this, but it would take her like 30 minutes to 40 minutes to get me there with traffic and all that stuff. And so I would just listen to podcasts on the way over. And I remember throwing that on, and it's probably like fucking 8 a.m. or something. And we're on the way, and I'm just listening to that. And I just remember Cody just being like, or Woods is just passionately going on about how, oh, he's Dusty's kid. I have to beat him. I want to be a pro wrestler, all this jazz. And then Cody is just, this is obviously paraphrasing. It's not quoting. It's just like, he's just like, I had no idea who you were, Austin.
It's very much the like Wanda, like you took everything from me, and Thanos saying, I don't know who you are.
Like, it's like, brother, I'm at a whole different level of this shit.
Yeah. So it starts with some amateur wrestling, of course. It ends up with Scott in a long headlock to Brett. Scott just fucking runs through him at the beginning, too. He just like powers through him like he's fucking Jason Kelsey on a lead block. He's just.
My favorite is, so Owen tags in a little after that.
Yeah.
Scott scoops, lands him, and then Rick tags in, and they do a little bit of amateur wrestling.
Yeah.
And you could see Owen is trying so hard. He's frantic with his movements. He's putting so much effort in. And then you look at Rick, calm as a fuck. Like, calm as a cucumber. Literally could not be more phased, or less phased.
Owen gets free, hits a German, 2 count. We get some good moves here. One of the moves I think I like most by Owen, aside from his dropkick, which I would rate as like, you know, high B, low A tier. Like it's really good.
It's up there. It's not S, but it's up there.
His Northern Light suplex is clean as hell. Like it's another one of those moves that like when people do it well, you just take it for granted. But you see Owen doing it, you're like, okay, this guy knows.
Yeah, I definitely put it up there. I mean, the two people for some reason that come to mind for me when I think of the Northern Lights suplex are for some reason Matt Jackson of the Young Bucks.
Fair.
And then Ricochet.
Not Alicia Fox?
Not Alicia Fox. Didn't jump off to me off the top of my head. But yeah, now that I think about it, yeah, Alicia Fox too. Alicia
Fox, she got it too. So then we get a little bit more action. Brett gets tagged in. Rick gets arm control on him and just knees it repeatedly, which is like, that's a very Rick Steiner offensive move. Just, I have a knee, you have an arm, let's make a meet, see how it goes. You bring your friends, I'll bring my friends.
We can be friends, we should be friends.
Switch. Brett hits a drop kick when he gets free, and then an elbow to the back of the neck, then locks in the sleeper, and we get the 3 arm raise test, my favorite.
Rick, this is the coolest shit.
Go into it.
So we get the 3 arm raises. Rick is near the ropes, but he's not at the ropes. And by the way, I just want to say, this is a hidden gem. It is now my favorite one of these arm raise counter things.
Yeah.
The previous holder of it was that Roman Reigns Seth Rollins match from last year's Rumble, where on the 3rd raise, Rollins drops the hand and it lands on the rope.
Yeah.
That was up there. Now it's this. So we do the 2. It's perfectly fine where he sets up the 3rd one. And then as he drops the arm, Rick goes forward and he lands right on the ropes.
Oh, so there's 2. So Rick holds it the first time they do it, picks up Brett, backs him into the turnbuckle. Brett reestablishes the sleeper hold. And then we get that one where they do 1, 2. And this time Rick just fades forward. Brett holds on, but Rick is technically touching the ropes now.
So well, he's on like, the rope. He's just on it.
Which, again, like, he's not conscious of it, but he is touching the rope. And so, like, you got to break it up. And Brett takes a very long time to break up the hold. Yeah. And I'm like, ooh, shades of heel, Brett. You'll love to see it.
Then we just get some great Bret Hart moments. We get a picture-perfect suplex. Bret Hart, still one of the best suplexes in the history of pro wrestling. Bret eats a boot when he does his middle rope elbow drop. He does the spot that Owen has done a couple times already, which is the running chest first into the corner.
Yep.
It's a Bret Hart staple. Scott tags in, hits a tilt-a-whirl slam. A little further down, we get a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker from Rick. Mm. And then he gets, I think it's Owen, or it might be Bret actually, in a tombstone position. And instead of hitting a tombstone, just jumps forward or just falls forward.
They called it a Steiner pancake.
And I was like, that's the coolest shit I've ever heard.
It's a great idea for it. Like, obviously, it's less effective than the tombstone because you don't land on your neck, you land on your back. But like, if you're a big guy doing that move, that'll still hurt.
And then, brother, we get some of the greatest, one of the legitimately most shocking things I have ever seen in my life.
Which is?
Rick hits a big running clothesline, standing elbow drop for a near fall, gets Bret up in a suplex position, and then motherfucker hits a Samoan driver. Or sorry, he gets Owen up in a suplex position. It's a fucking Samoan driver.
All this, and we skip by the nastiest looking full Nelson slam by Scott. Like the full Nelson German that he does?
Yeah.
Where I was scared for Owen.
Full Nelson German. Brother, that's just a Dragon suplex.
I'll call it what I want. Call
we
it
just what you did want. An entire month on Dragon suplex.
I know. That shit showed up all the time. Scott wants to slingshot Owen back into the ring from the apron, but Owen instead pulls the rope back and ends up slinging Scott over the ropes to the outside.
My favorite wrestling trope.
The fact that you can just bounce somebody out of the ring?
Yeah, just, I'm going to pull the rope and you're going to somehow fly out of the ring.
Yeah, it just gives me shades of when, was it Mark Henry who pushes Batista and Batista does the weird falling backwards and rolls? Where he just way oversells?
Which is like, brother, Mark Henry's probably got like 50 pounds on you. What are we doing?
The Shawn Michaels school of selling.
Oh, jeez. You're too big to be doing this, Dave. We get an atomic drop clothesline combo by Bret. Middle rope elbow drop for a near fall. And then he starts putting on a sharpshooter. But Rick is like, oh, we're not doing this. So he immediately gets him out. Scott lifts Owen up. Rick gets on the top rope. They're going for a Steiner recliner. Bret grabs Rick, doesn't allow that to happen. Owen is able to roll Scott up from that for a near fall. And then everything just kind of breaks loose.
Yeah, Bret and Rick end up on the outside. Scott to the top rope with an axe handle to the outside on Bret. Owen with a plancha over the top rope to Rick. They're all brawling. And then all of a sudden you hear a bell and you're like, what the fuck is going on? Technically, they all have been counted out. I thought, because online it lists as a double disqualification, which is not. It's because they were both outside the ring for too long. Even though I feel like if you were to run the tape and do like a regular ref count, you'd get to like six, maybe.
If that.
Like even in Japan where they do like the count to 20 in a faster pace, you'd get to 14, maybe. Like, I don't know. It seemed like it was really shame of an ending. But it's not the end, because if you look at the clip, it goes on for a while. And the reason is they don't stop fighting. They just keep brawling.
Scott gets on the mic, says that they came here to beat him. So he says, Bret, Owen, get your butts back in the ring. And they brawl.
And I thought they were going to restart the match because it seemed like everyone was down for it. But refs are in there trying to break it up. Gorilla Monsoon is on commentary making fun of Pat Patterson for getting fat. Which Scott Steiner heard and then was like, I'm going to use this on Samoa Joe. in a couple of years, I'm going to come back around to this. The Steiners then, after they get pulled apart, walk away. Bret gets on the mic and asks them what they're waiting for.
And, like, and they come back here in another bro.
It's an unfortunate ending because you'd like to see a definitive end to a match like this, but this is the recommendation this week. It's a hidden gem. I guarantee you probably haven't seen it. Go and watch it just for some impeccable tag wrestling. I do stand by that brothers make the best tag teams. Like there's a lot of evidence at this point that they just do. Like
it's hard not to.
Like these two teams, the Usos and the Jacksons, is enough to be like
fucking the Briscoes.
Briscoe. Like look at take those five teams. they have to rank in at least the top 10 of anyone's wrestling.
Yeah, I honestly, I don't see how you can't put
Hart Foundation. Like Bret and Owen probably wouldn't be up there, but like
I'm putting the Hart Foundation's a top 5 team. The Usos for me are a top 5 team. Yeah. The Young Bucks have to be in that category as well. And if you're putting the Young Bucks there, then so are the Briscoes, and then that just kind of leaves the door open for a lot of other people. And the Steiners, while I do think they're in the back half of a top 10, I think they're probably, you know, somewhere in that 8 to 10 range, they're definitely there.
There's a certain subset of wrestlers where when we eventually get to their episode, it's going to be really tough because of the amount of times they've shown up in other people's episodes. And the Steiners are the number one tag team for that. Yeah. They show up in every 80s and 90s tag team to have a banger. And then we're going to have nothing left when we cover the Steiners.
Well, no, because the thing is, I think it's going to be easier because we're just going to really realistically do a Steiner three-parter where it's one tag team, one Rick, one Scott. You know, now the Rick episode is going to be the hard one because Rick solo stuff is going to be very difficult to come by. But
the Scott stuff, we're going to get the pose down with Triple H. Get excited, people.
We're going to get him doing, well, we all know what the promo is going to be for the Scott solo stuff. I got 123 and 3/3 chair.
I don't even recognize any other math other than Steiner math. That's what I want to teach in schools. All right. We're going to take our last break. When we get back, we're looking at heel Owen Hart. Back from the break. After that match in January 94 that took place on WrestleFest, later that month at the Royal Rumble, Owen would turn on his brother Bret in a match against the Quebecers, which we covered in our Jacques Rougeau episode. Go listen to that. Everything was fine between the brothers, but then Bret kayfabe hurt his knee and was unable to tag in Owen for a long period of time, and Owen snapped. Because the referee stopped the match because of Bret's damaged knee, costing him a shot at the title. He kicked his brother in the knee repeatedly, walked off, and then we're looking at his promo that he cuts on the Titantron, fresh backstage, while Bret is being carted away. What do you think
in
of his
a
promo?
Wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
He's like in a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, he's like the town drunk, and he's being wheeled home. They're like, oh, here goes Bret again.
This fucker.
Couldn't handle his brown.
Owen gets asked why he did what he did. He goes, why what? He says Bret is selfish. Says that they had a shot on the most important night of their careers. They had a shot at the tag team titles, but Bret's ego's too big. He only worries about himself. Says that he had the biggest match of his life, and all Bret had to do was tag him in because he knew his knee was hurt. But he's so selfish.
Is it Todd Pettengill that's interviewing him? Is
that I believe it's Todd Pettengill.
He needs to let Owen go on his roll. He keeps trying to cut him off and asking questions. Like, Owen's just, he's vibing. Let him keep going.
And then we get the line of all lines. You're too selfish. And that's why you're sitting there with a bad leg. And that's why I kicked the leg out of your leg.
He kicked the leg out of your leg. I love, like, I'm going to kick your ass out of your ass is a great fucking line.
It's iconic. The kick the leg out of your leg. I don't care if technically it's a bad promo line.
You got no leg. It's all no leg. There's no more leg left in your leg.
The leg is done. I kicked the leg out of your leg. You have a functional leg. Now it's not functional. I kicked the leg out of it.
Bret cost Owen the tag titles. He also says that he doesn't care because Todd asked him about costing Bret the Rumble that's happening later. He says he doesn't care about the Rumble. Owen and Bret never faced off in the Rumble. Did you know that? They never actually come face-to-face in the Rumble. Owen is eliminated fifth in the Rumble by Diesel. Bret wins, as we know. It's the 94 Rumble. Him and Luger both win at the same time.
Yep. Owen caps this all off by saying he's going to win the Rumble. He doesn't, as Evan just mentioned. And
fifth.
These unfortunate booking situations lead us to the next match on Earth.
Obviously, these two face off at WrestleMania 10. We have covered that match in our Bret Hart three-parter because it's one of Bret's greatest matches.
Yeah.
It's also one of Owen's greatest matches. If you're wondering, why aren't you having a match between Owen and Bret? There's a reason that there's a part two to this episode or to this series. All right?
Yeah.
So we've already covered the WrestleMania 10 match. Go and listen to the Bret Hart three-parter. It's also one of our most popular three-parters of all time. It's worth a re-listen. It's one. I think it's like a third one ever or a second one ever.
It was third.
It goes Undertaker, Michaels, Bret Hart.
Yeah.
So
you know, it's still fresh babyface version of the boys, but
that's right.
The heel turns were imminent. The heel turns are still imminent. Who knows when it'll happen? What makes it beautiful.
I can't wait till we both turn heel. Start acting like some of those other fucking podcasts you see on Twitter who just cause shit all of the time. And we come up with new music, like when the Usos were on SmackDown Live for the first time. We're like, wow, this is cool.
Yeah, we're down since day one-ish. Oh, fuck.
I always like that because it's like they're down from day one and it's like kind of. Like that's how my ass interprets it. Like I know it's supposed to be shit, essentially. But they're like, we've been down since day one-ish. Like, you know, we showed up afternoon of day two. And or like we were kind of down, but not really. Like it makes sense. Like there's
We got there at 11:30.
Look, it started at 9, but we had some things to do. I had to pick up the dry cleaning.
We're the Usos. We're island boys. You know, we had to get there. Come on, cuz. We had to get there at 11:30.
If you had to hang out for a day with the island boys or the Davinci twins, who would you pick?
Davinci, and it's not even close.
I love my Davinci boys.
Davinci?
Let's move instead to Owen's biggest accomplishment thus far in WWF, which is the King of the Ring Finals. We're looking at the King of the Ring Finals from 1994, him versus Razor Ramon. They had the quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals all on the pay-per-view this year, which is kind of crazy. And because it's a tournament, I got to talk about the path to the finals. Ramon beat Quang.
What the fuck is Quang?
You don't know about Quang? Look it up. You don't. How do you not know about Quang?
Who the hell is Quang?
Quang.
Quang.
It was Savio Vega in a mask. You don't know about that?
What the fuck is that?
Don't you love Puerto Rico?
Also, Savio Vega's shoot name is Juan Rivera, and that's the most Puerto Rican thing I've ever heard in my life. Truly Shout out to the Puerto Rican king, Savio Vega.
Yeah, the Caribbean kid, Savio Vega, a.k.a. Quang. So Razor Ramon beat Quang. I'm so glad I could introduce you to Quang. He beat Quang, he beat Bam Bam Bigelow, and he beat IRS to get there. It's a very heel.
What a run.
And then Hart beat Doink, Tatanka, and the 1-2-3 kid.
One of these things is not like the other. One of these things is Owen Hart's run to the King of the Ring finals.
One of these things is Quang. Quang, Quang, Quang goes the trolley. All right. What did you think of this finals? What did you think of this match?
Well, the match is whatever. It's pretty short, but Owen goes straight demon mode, and there's German commentary with, honestly, I'm just going to keep it completely 100 with you. This match, whatever my opinion on it, you got to multiply it by like at least 25% just because of the German commentary.
If you want, you can watch it on Peacock with non-German commentary, but if you go to fullpresswrestling.com, the link will have German commentary because that's what we could find.
It's great. I couldn't understand a single word they were saying except for the English stuff that they would say because, like, you know, there's some moves.
They don't have a word for fall away slam in German.
So they'll just say fall away slam, and I'm not, and then immediately go and stuff. At one point, I swear to God, they said Auschwitz. I don't know what the deal with that is. I don't know what.
Probably a very similar word. It's probably what they were going with. But
I don't speak German, so I don't know what was going on there. But you know, it was said on the video. Therefore,
one of our listeners could probably give us some more context. I'm sure there's somebody who speaks German. This is our first real look at heel Owen. Do you prefer heel or babyface Owen?
Oh, I absolutely prefer heel Owen. It's because he's just he's much more lively, I would say, as a character.
That's a good way to put it.
He's just like, he gets on the mic and he's just immediately going at 100. He's not like, you know, we got Owen. We saw Owen with some babyface fire to him and all this stuff. And he just kind of comes off a little bland, a little too pure babyface for my liking. I like Owen as a heel because he's got an edge to him. He's going out there. He's like, I kicked the leg out of your leg and shit like that, you know?
Also, he's so righteous. Like, he's so self-righteous of, like, he's right and you're wrong and shut the fuck up. And he's just yelling at fans constantly.
You know what it is? Know what it is and why it really resonates with me? Owen, youngest of 12. Me, youngest of 2. We're the young boys out here, man. It's, you know, it resonates with you too. You're the youngest of three. We're all young out here, man.
That's true. We're all out here just being annoying, trying to make a name for ourselves.
We're just the attention seeking babies of the family.
Owen with some flips to get out of an armbar early and then just slaps Razor Ramon in the face. Also, I feel like we should qualify because it's always important. This is the real Razor Ramon. This isn't Rick Bogner, as we mentioned a couple weeks ago.
It's 94, not 96. Jesus.
Razor catches Owen when he tries a crossbody, hits him with a scoop slam, an elbow drop. Owen gets slingshot into the turnbuckle, Razor with a pin. Owen gets a head scissors on the ground, but Razor does like the standing flip to get free, and they do some more pin combinations. Razor really working for a backslide. There's like a solid 30 seconds where he's going for a backslide.
Yeah, they bridge out and they immediately are like having a battle for positioning on a backslide. And I was like, okay, this is the type of wrestling I'm here for. Okay.
I always give forgiveness to end of tournament, like finals of tournament matches when you've done the tournament in a day. I'm always a little more forgiving because I'm like, you've done this three times today, usually. It's like, all right, if this isn't your full energy, or you're not coming up with new shit in it, I'm not mad. And some of his other matches, like his match against 123 Kid, is higher rated in terms of star rating.
But do not doubt that.
But it's better. I want to see the crowning achievement of the King of Hearts.
Also, I mean, there's a really important moment at the end of this match.
There sure is, and we'll get to that.
Needs to be talked about. Owen hits a spinning heel kick. He gets an abdominal stretch on for a damn long time, and he just keeps grabbing the rope. And then the ref, who I think might be Joey Morella, I think it is. He just keeps going around and looking, and then going around and looking, and it's just like, okay.
Yeah, I'll catch you Duke boys one day. Then we get the hip toss by Ramon. He counters Owen's flippy shit with what was essentially a rock bottom.
Yeah, it was just a Niranagi, out of nowhere for a near fall.
But Razor has enough panache that he puts his arm out the way Rock does, and I was like, that's a fucking rock bottom.
Yeah, he fucking gets him.
Good job, Scott Hall.
He gets him up, hits a fallaway slam for a near fall. Razor Ramon, great fallaway slam.
Excellent. I remember that from our Scott Hall episode.
Yes, excellent, excellent, excellent. At one point, he goes up for a suplex. Owen reverses out of it, ends up hitting a side Russian leg sweep. Owen goes up to the top rope at one point. He looks like he's going for either a splash or a moonsault, something like that. Razor meets him up there, hits an avalanche back suplex.
It is nice. It's really nice. Razor's calling for the edge. He's going for the Razor's edge. He's calling for the end of the match. Gets countered by Owen. He dumps him to the outside. And here comes Jim the Anvil Neidhart to check on Razor Ramon.
Yeah, because it looked like Razor's tweaked his knee. He's grabbing at his knee.
And what does Neidhart do instead of check on Razor?
He helps him up, and then he just clotheslines him straight to hell.
Runs him into the ring post, sends him into the ring. Owen up top, diving elbow drop, and Owen Hart is the king of the ring. And then the boys hit a heart attack to Ramon after the match to send a message.
The Black Heart, baby, the king of hearts. Shout out to Owen. The run as the king for Owen Hart is honestly one of the more memorable ones to me, in my opinion. I think he's absolutely one of the Mount Rushmore King of the Ring winners.
All right, give me the rest.
Well, Brett's up there. The Macho King, I think, is also up there.
Yeah.
And it's tough with the next one, man. Like, you just want to say so many different people. Like, I think the moment of Steve Austin winning is very important, but I do not think that his run as the king of the ring like did anything for me. Like, for this, I'm not saying that this moment here is what's on my Mount Rushmore. It's the entire run as the king.
Yeah.
And because of that, I am going to say probably Hunter Hearst Helmsley. I love that run by Hunter Hearst Helmsley. I also, you know, shout out to Kurt Angle. Shout out to Regal. Regal. There's a lot of guys who had great runs.
Harley Race.
There it is. Right there. Harley Race. The original king.
Yeah. A lot of good kings. Xavier Woods, baby. I was just so happy for
him. That's your number one. I know that's your number one.
That's my guy. What did you think diving into the career of the early stuff of Owen Hart?
Man, it's just So it really did catch me a little off guard just how fucking good he was as as a kid, so pretty early, much.
Yeah.
But also just the fact that he doesn't change very much, which, I mean, I take that both good and bad, because I think it's good because it shows how good he was, where, you know, he didn't really have to change much because he was already so damn good at it. But it also is a negative in that regard, because wrestling, you have to evolve. No one's ever their first character and that's the one that they become fucking forever. The megastar. Yeah. Like Stone Cold was so many different characters before he ended up under Stone Cold Steve Austin and you know, winning. Hulk Hogan, Terry Bollea was he was so many different versions of himself probably before he ended up being Hulk Hogan, the megastar of the 80s. Same thing with Macho Man, same thing with Shawn, same thing with The Rock. You know, all these people, you never start off with that first character and just go. Owen wasn't that either. Owen obviously had different phases, the blue blazer, he had his face with the hearts, after that. But the thing with Owen is there just wasn't a noticeable change of any kind. He had that little streak with his heel run in 94 into 95. And then eventually 96, I believe, is when he turns back and joins the hearts. But like, you know, there just isn't enough of a change for the character, for him as a performer. So for me to viably see him push towards that top echelon. Yeah. And I guess that's why he wasn't.
But I think the heel turn helps.
Yeah.
And I think as we get into next week, we're going to see a lot more character development. Next week, we got lots of good matches. We got some matches against his brother. We got some matches against British Bulldog, his brother-in-law. We got matches against Shawn. We got matches against Stone Cold. We got a lot of big matches. We'll also talk about his history as a prankster, being one of the most notorious rib guys in the history of the business. We'll also, of course, talk about his untimely passing and his terrible tragic and all the fact that it was one of the worst decisions Vince McMahon has ever made, which that's quite the list to be on, because goddamn,
that is an extensive
terrible, terrible decisions. Kind of a bummer note to end on, but very excited to see more of Owen Hart. What a talented wrestler.
So
good. What a just crisp performer. And I'm excited to see some of the stuff that I've seen before, but I haven't seen in such a long time. Very excited for that next week.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I cannot wait to see what comes next with Owen. I know some of the matches that are up next on the hopper, and man, it's just good shit all around. And it's Owen Hart. It's always going to be good shit.
Yeah. Of course, this week, go watch that Steiner match. Do it. That's the one.
Don't even debate it. Don't even. There's nothing else that's even in the ballpark with it.
If you have an extra 10 minutes to kill after the fact, I would say go watch the Hiroshi Hase match.
Yeah, I just think it's cool.
Just to see the speed.
Honestly, if you have like 30 seconds, just watch the intro. That intro to that video is awesome.
That intro absolutely makes it. All right. Thank you for listening. Go and watch all the matches on fullpresswrestling.com. The links are always there. We have all of the crossbody work episodes there. You can go and find links for all of our matches. You can also, there's a little player. You can even play this podcast while you have the matches going, if you really wanted to. That exists. It's just tied in right there. Ooh. Also, check out fullpressshop.com. Cop the merch, support the boys. We got a t-shirt. Tell us any new designs you want us to make. Maybe we'll make some new merch for the new year. Wherever you're listening, be sure to rate 5 stars. It helps us out tremendously. If you rate 5 stars and you write something in the rating, we will read it on air. Please be nice. But if you're not nice, at least, you know, be funny. If you don't have anything nice to say something devastating.
Honestly, just say something. I don't even give a shit at this point.
And or make sure that you subscribe. And of course, you can follow us on social media. Javier, where can people find you on social media?
I'm on the Twitter machine at JMelloSports. It's in the bio of the podcast Twitter account. Evan will give you those details right now.
You can get my Twitter at it's Evan Gomes, ITSEVANGOMES. And of course, most importantly, is the Crossbody of Work, Twitter and Instagram at Crossbody of Work. Next week is obvious. It's Owen Hart part dos. Don't get it twisted. Why would it be anything else?
Yeah.
But we've got some other cool shit planned for the next month or two. The boys are getting better at planning the content ahead of time, but if you have somebody you want us to cover, hit us up on Twitter at @crossbodyofwork. Odds are we might have covered them already, and we'll just guide you to their old episode. But that's the beautiful thing about these episodes. They stand alone. You can go listen to episode 1. You can go listen to episode 100. They're all the same. They all live perfectly in harmony because we just talk about old stuff. You know what I mean? It's nice. Our catalog never goes out of style. You know?
It's like Taylor Swift.
Yeah. It's like a crisp t-shirt. Always useful. You know? It's not like I saw that people are bringing back wide leg jeans. Get fucked.
Yeah, I'm not about that one.
You know what the thing? I grew up with wide leg jeans, and I also grew up with anytime it rained outside, for some reason, the backs of my pants were just wet at my ankles for years. You know how awful that was? The only upside was that the pockets were so deep I could smuggle candy into the movies. Just walking in with JNCO jeans and a fucking thing full of Mike and Ikes is incredible.
If anybody wants to know how old Evan is, that is how old they are.
Movies
right
used to cost 25 cents, and then they added the talking. All right. any final words for the people?
Well, Evan, as you are well aware up there in the Great White North, we are in for a generational chill for the next couple days.
Yep.
By the time this is released, it's already Saturday and we're in the second of the 2 days. But, you know, just stay warm out there, people. If you got a heater, turn that shit on. If you don't, bundle the fuck up. Get blankets, get layers, do everything. An important note, if you are not... again, by this point it's probably too late, but if you are not going to be around, make sure you leave heats on, a heat source of some kind. You do not want to get your pipes frozen, and then that just creates a whole bigger issue for you somewhere down the line. Stay warm, go out there, stay warm, make sure your pipes don't freeze, make sure you don't freeze, make sure that the homeless don't freeze. If you see a homeless person out there and you see them like they're not really making much movement to get anywhere, call 911. The police will assist them, especially if there is a freezing emergency. I know the city of Boston has already declared one. If you see anyone outside who should not be outside, just let the authorities know. They will absolutely find them someplace to go.
Other tip, you should keep a blanket in your car in the winter, especially in case your car dies or you end up being stuck somewhere and you need to have a little bit of extra warmth. Keep a warm blanket in your car and a thermal blanket if you can to be able to retain heat. These are tips from the Great White North. Everything's cold here all of the time. You should come visit in the summer. It's a lovely 12 days. All right. Thank you so much for listening as we covered the first part of the career of Owen Hart. We're back next week to finish up the career. We will talk to you then.
Reach for the sky, boy.